play is. And he uses the expression negative selectivity as a way of describing this problem. The pivotal concept for understanding the class character of the state is the negative selectivity of state institutions. And the italicized definition on page 2 of the notes explains this. The structure of the state is such that it makes certain state actions impossible and others impossible. It systematically imposes biases into the process of policy formation. The thesis that the state has a class character, then, is a claim, a hypothesis, about the content of this selectivity. The state is organized in such a way that it excludes certain possibilities on a class basis. This selectivity has a systematic class bias to it. Just two quick kinds of examples. We observe in a political debate that certain kinds of alternatives are on the table, being debated, and certain things are not on the table. So there are certain possibilities, certain alternatives, which are excluded. The claim about negative selection is that what is on the table and what is off the table is not random. What's off the table has been excluded for specific class reasons. So there's a class bias in the process that excludes this from the table of debate. The same kind of argument can be made around elections. We observe in a given election a range of candidates that are on the ballot that represent a range of political perspectives. Certain perspectives are not on the ballot. Certain kinds of positions are either not on the ballot or not seriously on the ballot. They're excluded from contention in an election. Now, again, this could be haphazard, it could be random, or the exclusions could be systematic. The claim about negative selectivity is that there is something systematic about what is excluded and what is not. And the systematicity of that exclusion, the thing which renders it systematic, has a distinctive class character. And that can be called a class bias of negative selection. In Offie's own analysis, he argues that there are four nested filter mechanisms that constitute this negative selectivity. I'm not going to review in any care his particular way of breaking down selectivity into these different filter mechanisms. I actually think Joram Terborn's account of the actual class character of the state, the properties that he sees accomplish this negative selection, is more interesting than what Offie has to say. But I think Offie's methodological discussion of the problem of establishing class selection, class negative selection, Offie's analysis of the methodological problem are more interesting than anything Terborn says about that. The problem then is, how do you demonstrate such class bias? Now, think about this. The argument of class bias is that it excludes things. What it means to say that a process is biased is to identify what is excluded. But how do you observe what's excluded? That's not such an easy matter. We can observe what are the alternatives being debated in the public arena around healthcare. How do we observe the things that aren't being debated? How do you observe things that are off the table? This in the social science literature is sometimes called the problem of non-events. How do you explain things that don't happen? Sometimes it's also called non-decision making. How do you explain things that aren't decided? It's easy to explain the forces at work in making a decision, but how do you explain the non-decision, the non-event? The problem, the methodological problem is that some things that don't happen just have not yet happened. So some things have not actually been excluded, they just haven't yet happened. They are only, if you will, accidentally or contingently excluded, not systematically. I mean, an example I've used for this is that before I came here, there was no course in Marxist sociology and no class analysis program in the department. When I arrived, the students thought they would have to engage in some horrendous struggle to get this, because they assumed that there were systematic biases in place in the bourgeois university that would prevent such a course from happening. In fact, it just hadn't happened, because nobody had volunteered to teach it and nobody had demanded it. And it was no problem at all. I mean, it was a complete uneventful struggle, as it were. Simply meant filling out a form and getting the course to put on the book. So some things just are contingently excluded. Some things are non-events because they are epically excluded. That is, there's no social category that could conceivably support them. So they are non-events, but they're not interesting non-events. They're not non-events that reflect the active exclusionary processes. If we want to ask the question, we observe that there are no developed capitalist states in which the state officially sacrifices animals at harvest time to appease the gods of harvest. And if we want to ask the question, well, why don't states do this? People would think, what a stupid question. You know, there's no constituency, there's no social interest, there's no social foundation for such practices by the state. And therefore, no exclusionary work has to be done in order to ensure that we don't have sacrifices of animals at harvest time by the state. The kinds of exclusionary mechanisms we're interested in, the sorts of negative selection that really matter, are the ones which, if they broke down, would mean things would begin to happen. These are meant to be active processes of exclusion. And unless these exclusionary mechanisms were in place, then much more radical democratic and egalitarian possibilities would begin to appear in the center of political activity. So the burden on studying non-events is to study the systematically generated non-events that would be events in the absence of that exclusion. Those are the ones we care about. Is that idea clear? That is, we're interested in the thesis. I mean, this is a proposition which may or may not be defendable. The thesis is, there are certain things that don't happen which would happen in the absence of these mechanisms. So these mechanisms of negative selection are active mechanisms that are filtering out things, blocking them from occurring. And in the absence of such mechanisms, the probability of those obstructed possibilities occurring would go way up. The claim that the capitalist state is a capitalist state with a particular class character is a claim that it has properties which accomplish that feat, accomplish those kinds of exclusions. Yeah.
And that can be done on the state political level, it could also be happening on the social, on the economic and ideological levels too, right?
Yeah, you could, the notion of negative selectivity, you could apply this principle, this way of thinking about things, to any institutional setting. And to all sorts of aspects of it. You know, it wouldn't just have to be the state, for sure. The same point is made, would be made around gender. That is, the claim would be there are some aspects of the way the state is organized which have the effect of excluding gender egalitarian policies or possibilities. That is, negative selection. Exclusion, of course, need not be absolute. One can think of these biases as simply making it much more difficult for certain kinds of perspectives and possibilities to be actively on the table. But still, the greater difficulty has to be attributable to the design of these institutions. You have to be able to attribute the difficulty of more egalitarian class politics occurring to the way in which the institutions are designed. They're designed in ways that exclude and make more difficult that possibility.
You can't further say that these events would have happened in absence of these systematic processes, right? Because if there's a vacuum there, something else may have came in its place. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the minimum claim is that they're more likely to happen if these mechanisms are absent. That is, these mechanisms are meant, these negative selections are meant to be explanatory. They're not, this is not meant to be some obscure philosophical point. The idea of negative selection is to identify some real processes in the way the state is organized and the way it functions. Real processes that make it difficult for certain kinds of oppositional positions to be heard and be taken seriously and be part of the agenda of politics. If that's true, it means that if those mechanisms disappeared, it should be easier, all things considered, of course, easier for those policies to get on the table. Now, it's possible if a particular set of mechanisms disappeared, other mechanisms would be created. I think a good case can be made that there's huge redundancy in the system. It's not that the capitalist state is such a finely tuned instrument that if you change any one of these many properties that we'll be discussing when we look at Terborn's account, that suddenly the system will fall apart. So there's lots of redundancy. Offing characterizes this with the metaphor of nested filter mechanisms, which act as kind of bulwarks of defense. So if one of these negative selections breaks down, well, there's other negative selections that are still in place. You can think of it as like a set of filters to reduce pollution. You have polluted water, and they go through a heavy mesh screen and a narrow mesh screen and a paper filter, so that by the time the water gets to your tap, it's clean. Well, what have you done? You've systematically excluded toxins of different sorts through these nested filters. The way of thinking about the cleaning of water is it's a set of design features in place in the water system that negatively selects out things you don't want and leaves in things which are acceptable. What we mean by clean water is the toxins have been removed and what's left is okay. And that's done through a series of filters, not a single filter. It's done through a single series of filters with built-in redundancy. A well-engineered water system has lots of redundancy, as opposed to everything having to operate just perfectly, otherwise toxins will get through. Well, that's a metaphor then for the way the argument. It's a metaphor for the argument for the class character of the filters in the capital state. The institutions are designed in such a way that the toxins that would hurt capitalism, anti-capitalist worker empowerment policies, have a hell of a time getting through the filters. There's all of these obstructions which make it difficult for those kinds of issues to get on the table and to get treated seriously. So that when you actually look at the debate that take place in the legislature over alternative policies for improving working conditions, all of them will be compatible with a well-functioning capitalism. No proposals for the improvement of working conditions will be a threat to capitalism. Now, it doesn't mean then that among the possible ways of dealing with problems of working conditions, some of them might be more favorable to particular capitalists than others. Some might be better for workers than others. The argument of negative selection says, so long as the anti-capitalist possibilities are off the table, then you can have a pluralistic, democratic free-for-all as to what actually wins on the table. The policy that actually wins could indeed be the policy most favorable for workers. Of the various policies that are left after you've gotten rid of the toxic ones, It could be that workers mobilize, the unions are strong enough, they back the right politicians, and for instrumental reasons, the pro-working class policy gets passed, and the one that's most favorable to capitalists gets defeated. But, the argument goes, that's not evidence that workers control the state, nor is it evidence against the capitalist character of the state. It just means that among the policies which are compatible with capitalism, the one that's optimal for capitalists didn't pass. But all that the capitalist state interest wants to ensure is that the toxic policies are excluded. The question then is, how do you go about demonstrating that those exclusions exist? How do you go about proving the case that there are systematic class biases in this filtering process? Well, in Offie's paper, he goes through a whole set of possible ways you could go about it, you know, different strategies you could use for diagnosing this question, for assessing the existence and providing evidence for the existence of exclusionary mechanisms. They're listed in the notes and they're in his essay. I don't want to spend time going through each of these and discussing their pros and cons. Rather, I just want to mention what he considers to be the crucial one, the one that provides the strongest evidence. In his view, the strongest evidence for exclusionary mechanisms occurs only in those historically special circumstances in which the mechanisms themselves are challenged. That is, it's crisis situations where the exclusions break down that you can actually observe how they function. That when exclusionary processes are really in place and effective, they're invisible. They're hard to demonstrate because they've excluded so effectively certain things from happening. So you can argue on kind of moral grounds or philosophical grounds that certain things are excluded, but to show that they're actually excluded, the way to do it is by challenging the limits of possibility, and then by observing the special cases where the limits break down and then are perhaps restored. It's the breakdown and restoration of exclusionary mechanisms that most clearly reveals their operation. This is, in some ways, not unlike Freud's argument about psychoanalysis, that is, examining the pathological case is the way of revealing the normal functioning of mechanisms. That was a thesis, a kind of a methodological precept of psychoanalysis, that you study pathological cases because that helps to reveal more clearly the mechanisms operating in normal psychological repression. It's when the normal psychological repression breaks down and people act out that you can then understand how the normal processes work. Because what the normal processes in the psychoanalytic view of the unconscious, what the normal processes do when they're well functioning is they exclude certain kinds of behaviors. They block them. And by observing what happens when that blockage breaks down, you then can understand how it functions when it works well. Well, Offie makes the same point about negative selectivity with respect to the class bias of the state. It's really when they're challenged. If you want to know what the limits of possibility are in a particular system, what the negative exclusions are, the best way to do is to organize an experiment where you massively create a social movement that challenges those limits of exclusion under crisis conditions where they're challengeable and see what happens. Well, of course, NSF doesn't fund that kind of research. And in many circumstances, you're not going to be able to observe it. It's therefore a cautionary, and in some ways, Offie's analysis of negative exclusion, negative selectivity, is a pessimistic one for researchers, because it says, you can't simply decide, I want to study institutions of the American capitalist state exclude certain kinds of possibilities, and I'm going to study it right now, well, it may be this is not an empirical setting in which the exclusionary properties can convincingly show that it's, things are being excluded for these kinds of reasons.